Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael. Glad you could be with us this evening. We have some great guests lined up for tonight's program. We'll get to our first guest leading off the program. On the phone lines, we head down to the Delaware Valley region, Eitan Shander from Philadelphia's ESPN Radio 97.5, the Fanatic talk show host and update anchor extraordinaire. Eitan, welcome to RCN Sports Talk. Thanks for joining us this evening.
It is my pleasure. Truly appreciate you having me on tonight.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's nothing going on in Philly we can really talk about. Just the national championship, a front office in turmoil, Flyers, maybe with the best week, the regular season to close out a regular season. And, oh, by the way, Major League Baseball opening day. I'd like to start with Villanova, if I can, and just admit publicly I was not on board, and I did not think they had a chance up until they got to the Final Four. I am a Temple alum, full disclosure.
Nice.
But certainly, my hat off to them. It was a great ride. It was great for the city of Philadelphia, and it was maybe the best finish to an NCAA tournament that I ever saw. Your thoughts on Nova and their incredible run?
Well, first off, you weren't alone, and that's not just the rest of the Temple alum that felt that way. I think a lot of people were concerned, to say the very least, about Villanova and what they've been able to do, lack thereof, with chances in the tournament since 2009, their last Final Four appearance. So coming into this year with a team who was ranked number one, at the time in the regular season, that was a lot of people's on a lot of people's minds. What changed was the Miami game. That was the first of four straight games for Jay Wright where he was able to really show why he's one of the best X's and O's, one of the best game in-game adjusters right now in college. That doesn't mean he's the best, but he really, on a big stage, was able to control so much, and that brought a lot of people over, and you saw four straight games where he was able to dominate.
You know, we talked last night. You had an interesting take about Jay Wright and really how he outcoached every opponent he was up against in the NCAA tournament. Do you think he's gone underrated and he's going to be getting some great offers. The Suns reportedly already or thinking about offering him a contract. He'll probably get some other offers from NBA teams. Do you think he'll seriously consider leaving Villanova?
I don't think he considers leaving Villanova because the ability for him to influence the game changes drastically. Think about how much he loses as far as control in the NBA game. Sure, you can run a play, but ultimately it's a star. It's the person who you're going to put the ball in their hands. It's not about creating a play and getting someone open, especially with Villanova, who doesn't have any star power. They don't have a star on their team. They generate points via their offense and their system. And, yeah, four straight games, starting with Miami, ending in the national championship game, and it took everything against UNC. But he showed different strategy. He showed a different setup. And then in the second half was able to bounce back with a different game plan. So, Phoenix, another team may offer him a lot of money, but I think he's building something here. He's shown he can recruit, and he's shown that he can win without having a Buddy Hield, without having a Marcus Page, somebody who can dominate for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Delaware Valley will finally have a parade. With looking at the four major pro sports teams, we thought we could go a long time before we see another parade. How much do you think Friday Parade is going to invigorate the Delaware Valley?
You know, this is not to take anything away from Villanova because I'm in favor and have been from the jump of them having the parade where it is in the city. I think it's going to do a little on Friday, but it will be short-lived because the Flyers have a lot of expectations on their shoulders right now. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the NFL draft comes along, you know the Eagles will be the key focus. They already are as far as a 1 or a 1A. And whatever happens with the Sixers draft now actually has a lot more attention on it because of what happened with Sam Hinkie. So I think it will be great, but it will be looked at as more for the kids who earned it. Jay Wright, he earned it. This is about Villanova, and I think that's how we should look at college accomplishments if it's in Philadelphia or anywhere else. It's for the school, it's for the kids, it's for the student-athletes, I hate that term, but it's for the players out there and the coaches more so than I think it is for the city in this case.
You know, you mentioned the Flyers. They've been another great story up until last night. I was really disappointed by their effort last night. Pretty much in a must-win situation tonight. What do you think their chances are of winning out with Toronto tonight, Pittsburgh on Saturday, and then the Islanders coming up on Sunday to close out the regular season?
Well, the biggest problem is Pittsburgh. That's what it's been for this last stretch, where they've been able to build some momentum, and then no matter if it's in Pittsburgh or if it's in Philly, the Penguins are on the schedule, and then everything derails. So this is a must-win. I think everybody realized last night you go into it thinking, hey, must-win. Detroit's in a similar scenario. It's in Detroit, very difficult place to play. tonight, situation's changed. You're hosting the Leafs. You have to win this game. I think if you look at it, 3 points in the final three games should do it. So a regulation win and an overtime, another point somehow, should do it. Tonight's the regulation win. It's got to happen. And you cannot rely on one of the final two games, with Pittsburgh being one of them, a team that they continue to struggle against, being a must win. So the Flyers can really make it easier on themselves, significantly easier on themselves. Red Wings and Bruins tonight as well. So that is going to help the Flyers. They can take advantage of momentum lost last night with a bounce back win tonight.
You know how well Washington's been playing this year. I've been really impressed by them as well. Although, you know, you have an interesting theory on if the Flyers get in and they're matched up with Washington, you think they match up pretty well and would have a shot at Washington.
It's amazing, and you don't see that often, right? But for whatever reason, it's been recent and second half of this year, but they've played them really well, and it looks like they've had some really key matchups. Now, Shane Gostisbehere looks like he might be a little bit of, I don't want to say coming back to reality, but maybe plateauing a little bit, and they were really riding him hard through a couple of those games. But the reality is that this seems to be a good matchup with how the Flyers play. And if they're scoring, that's just going to continue their defense. Steve Mason has been really, really hot, and that's been key. The Capitals haven't had to play for anything recently, so you kind of hope that you can sneak in and steal a game real quick on the road early in that series and kind of change things. That would be key if the Flyers could take advantage of that, because otherwise the Caps are good, and they're up there for a reason, and you don't want to have this sleeping giant just awake, because I don't think that they can outlast them.
You mentioned Gottesberg, and I've really been impressed by him this year. He's an exciting player. I thought the Flyers team was going to be a year away, but because of Shane's ability and these younger players, they've made it interesting here to close out the regular season. Maybe they get a playoff spot, but how high do you think Shane's ceiling is, and what do you think about the future as far as ceilings of these younger players?
I think he is the first guy we look at, clearly, and not to say that anybody who comes next year from the Phantoms and who gets called up, who maybe could have been this year, they can excel and maybe exceed it. But what we've seen, the level on a small sample size, mind you, but what we've seen is a kid who has some amazing abilities and how he sees the game. It's, you can see it out there watching it. We don't need to be down at the stadium to see it. It's evident on TV. The game is moving so slow for him, which is so rare at a young age, at a rookie, to have everything develop like that. And that's what a lot of people will tell you, his teammates will tell you, if you ask them, if you interview them at different times, that's kind of a theme that you get. It's just how easy the game comes to him. So you figure this is a rookie. He's going to grow. The team is growing as well. They're in a really good spot. They have some money they can spend this offseason. You mentioned a couple of more young guys that'll be on their way up. And he's going to be the linchpin, I think. Mm. He's Joel Embiid when healthy.
When healthy is a big key.
Right.
Eitan Chander, our special guest from Philly's ESPN Radio, 97.5 The Fanatic, the home of both the Flyers and the Sixers. And, of course, the Sixers made some major news last night. Sam Hinkie, the GM, stepping down within a couple hours. Jerry Colangelo names his son as his replacement. There's a whole different, whole sets of storylines out there. I know you have an interesting take on what happened and your thoughts about all of this transactions that seemingly has been boiling for weeks, if not months, but of course became public last night.
First thing I thought of when Jerry Colangelo was brought in and the terms weren't released, we didn't even know if he had any type of ownership stake. The first immediate reaction was, this is the beginning of the end for Sam Hinkie. Mm-hmm. So when you know that, when you get that type of sports diagnosis, this shouldn't come as a surprise. Timing, maybe, because it's not the end of the season. But from Sam Hinkie's standpoint, my takeaway from all of this is that he was brought in to be the hatchet man. He was brought in to clean house and to establish a foundation. And through that is assets. And he has done a great job of dumping salary and creating assets and options for this team moving forward. I don't know. Clearly, this ownership group either caved in from outside pressure or they themselves felt that Jerry Colangelo would be the man to now move this thing forward. But Sam clearly saw, if you read this 13-page document that he gave to the ownership group, in private, mind you, and it's key to let us, everybody, to remind ourselves that this was released. This wasn't something that Sam made public and sent to ESPN. This was released by one of the owners that he sent it to. So this was all in private, and the owners actually prefer that type of communication. So he was kind of falling in line. So I think he saw the writing on the wall and decided to jump ship before he was pushed off the bow. And in doing that, at the end, the final page, he pretty much lays out that, don't screw this up, guys, because I set you up pretty well. Now, on the other side, unfortunately, you've got what looks to be Jerry Colangelo and this new regime doing everything they can to kind of distance themselves from Sam Hinkie. The ownership group was not present today. They kind of left Brett Brown, the head coach, out there to handle all the media about his boss's firing, which tells me that this is an ownership group that's looking to sell, and that's probably the reason why this thing and Sam got out in front of it, because he realized the ownership was going to sell, and his dream, his vision would be altered significantly.
Yeah, and the people I really feel bad for are the fans. I mean, they have been suffering. Not just people talk about the last 3 years being dreadful, which it has been, but they weren't even good before Hinkie arrived. And you go back in the late 80s and 90s, they were a bad team then. The Sixers fans in the Delaware Valley have really struggled. What is your feedback as far as the Philly fans towards this move over the last couple hours?
Here's what's amazing to me, and you hinted at it, is that before Sam Hinkie and this plan, this process that people were asked to trust, before it even got here, the inception of it, this team was mediocre, and people were just kind of on board understanding, hey, maybe you get a playoff series and you lose in the first round, but that's better than nothing. And then it was presented, hey, if we lose, but really lose, we can then bounce back and get out of this mediocrity and really compete. Yeah. So this same ownership group, this is amazing to me. This is the irony, I guess, in it. The same ownership group came in and actually sold losing to a frustrated, already frustrated fan base. And the fans, most of the smarter ones, understood the reality of the NBA and said, okay, I'll be on board for a couple of years and see what happens. So I don't know what the motivation was beyond outside pressure from the NBA or internal panic from this ownership group, maybe lack of patience in that case. But they have fans in their hands ready to sit there and accept losing for three straight years, possibly another year as well, if Hinkie was still at the top. But now they have in turn put even more pressure on themselves because they can't continue Sam's plan because the immediate reaction would be, well, why'd you fire Sam?
Yeah. Before we let you go, I just want to get your thoughts on opening day, which has been shuttled down off the headlines because of everything else that is going on this last week. I think people are kind of overreacting a little bit to the bullpen. It's a rebuilding year. You knew they had to trade Ken Giles. They got some nice prospects for him. People are panicking, saying the bullpen stinks. What's going on here? Should people just kind of relax and understand it's a rebuilding year? We know the bullpen's going to be bad, but you look a year or two or three down the road and this team will be better and just kind of ride out whatever we have to deal with this year in 2016?
Well, sure. Of course they should. Will they? No. And to be fair, here's the thing, though. 9 out of 10 times, I'll agree with you. Every single time, 9 out of 10 times, I'll agree with you. This is the one time where I'm kind of 50-50, and I'm trying to understand or at least look down the path of the fan who disagrees with us, because this team is going to lose the same way. However many, they may lose 100 games, and it's going to be 100 losses the same way. Mikel Franco is going to do something really great. Ryan Howard may hit a bomb. Aaron Ruff, somebody's going to do something here on this team because they do have some offense, and they're able to kind of move if it's small ball or get some power from Franco. They're going to be able to generate some runs, and you're going to see them lose leads, and it's going to be the same movie over and over. So at some point, I think fans will go into it expecting the rebuild year, maybe a month into it, but I got to tell you, 40 losses losing the same way, that's going to take its toll, let alone 100.
Yeah. Is there any one player besides Franco that you're really excited to watch for, either on the current roster or hopefully soon down the pike?
I would say J.P. Crawford is one, of course, because of the intrigue of where he'll play. And Aaron Nola is their ace, and he may not be good enough for their ace. He may not pan out as a true number one. But until this team is ready to compete, and at least for this year, next year, depending on what they do, I think he is their future arm, their main arm right now. And it just looks like he's doing some things really well, and it looks like there's some areas where he's struggling still. And it's kind of just growing pains, I should say, this growth process. It's tough because, as you mentioned, it's a rebuild here. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a second-year pitcher is coming in, third-year pitcher coming in, even a rookie coming in with a lot of veteran talent and seasoned guys around him. So he's learning like everybody else is, which isn't a total reflection on him. But, yeah, I would say Crawford and Nola are the two guys.
All right. Eitan, thanks so much for joining us. Continued success to you and your colleagues down at 97.5 The Fanatic.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Our pleasure. Eitan Sirander, excellent job talk show hosting and sports update anchoring on Philadelphia's ESPN Radio. Our thanks to him for joining us. Time to let our audience in on tonight's trivia question and give you a shot at winning tonight's prize. We will stick with the sport of NCAA basketball in honor of Villanova's big win in the tournament. Who holds the record for NCAA men's basketball for wins by 43 points or more? Nova had won the other night, but which school holds the record for most NCAA men's basketball wins by 43 points or more? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
And as a special bonus, we also have a couple of nice items to give away. A retro, a bobblehead for Shane Victorino, popular Philly from years past, and a finger. I guess this is a cool thing.
Yeah.
You go and you wave it around and maybe you hit people in the head with it. All right, let's introduce our special panelists here tonight from LehighValleyLive.com and the Express Times, Mr. Kyle Craig. And from the RCN Sports Department, as always, Mr. Joseph Linwood. Oh, get here. I can't hit you with this.
Always in the line of fire. Always in the line of fire.
Take a week off.
That was
nowadays.
A very interesting interview you had there, and it sounded a lot like the logic with the Phillies. Sounds like a lot of the logic with the Sixers. Be patient. We're going to take our lumps. I hope it doesn't take as long.
You've been all over the map with the Sixers the last 3 years. I'm not even going to.
Yeah, I have been. You're right. Absolutely.
Kyle,
right.
I want to get your thoughts because Kyle has been doing a great job online and on the newspapers with fall sports, spring sports, and winter sports. And I just want to kind of get your thoughts on all that happened. I thought it was a great winter basketball season.
Sure. Yeah.
Enjoyed your stories. I want to quick ask you, who comes up with the ideas like who has the best handle and who has the best student section? Because you guys have been running some really nice polls online.
Yeah, well, we try to engage, that's the key term that we use, with the readership and come up with things that might not be the typical topic of discussion, or that are the typical topic of discussion, but don't come up in the newspaper. So, people talk amongst themselves in the stands about topics like this.
Yeah.
Who has the best handle? Who's the best point guard? Who's the best scorer, pure scorer? So we just try to, give people a forum to talk about that, and hopefully, they use the forum to talk about it constructively. But I mean, the main thing is that it's fun for the kids, I think, most of all.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just another avenue that we try to use to, give them some attention and, recognize their skills. Because sometimes if you're just covering games every night, you don't really get to give people their due the way you'd like to.
Yeah. As far as spring sports, I know we're just coming out of basketball season. You're busy doing previews and getting ready. And then,
sure,
of course, you get all ready to cover a game and it snows or, wind chills in the teens or whatever.
Right.
It's been a dreadful spring. So take us through some of the teams you're covering and some of the teams you previewed and teams to watch.
Well, personally, I handled lacrosse. Mm-hmm. I think I'm the Lehigh Valley's longest tenured lacrosse writer, for whatever that's worth. But
which is huge in New Jersey. It's amazing because you go to in New Jersey, it's like like football is here in some areas.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the question about lacrosse in the Lehigh Valley is when will the top teams make the next step to be able to contend for a state championship? So that's kind of the question that happens every year. But as far as lacrosse goes in the Lehigh Valley, you know, Southern Lehigh is a team that I just wrote about today. They have 11 starters back from a district runner-up performance last year. Emmaus is a team that's the defending champion, and you can never really count out just because of what that program means to lacrosse. So that's in boys. Southern Lehigh in girls also should be very successful, so should be a big spring for that school overall. But, I mean, you look at the spring results that have come in already. Parkland softball lost its first local game since 2013.
Yeah, 33 games.
Yeah. It should be unpredictable. Certainly, I think, during boys basketball season, there was kind of the sentiment that it's Parkland and everybody else. I don't think there's any teams like that in the spring, so you should get some interesting results.
Do you think lacrosse gets hurt because in so many other sports like baseball or basketball, softball, there's so many good teams out there that you butt heads. And a lot of times in other sports, the competition around here is so good when they go to inner districts and play teams from outside the area, the quality is less until you really get deeper into the state tournament. Because there aren't as many teams in this area, do you think it kind of hurts the teams that are successful in this area, or are they able to find teams outside of the leagues?
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes, it does hurt them. And you have situations locally where you have a team like Emmaus that's been playing lacrosse forever, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
And you have other schools that have just started the sport where kids are literally just learning how to catch and pass the ball.
Yeah.
And they have to play each other, and that's, you know, an interesting situation. You get a lot of lopsided results. So that's something that, you know, Brad Bachman, Easton's boys coach, has talked about, that, you know, you have to still keep your level of competition up if you want your team to improve. A team like Easton, which has had a program that's established, if they want to be good and then they want to win a district title and then also, you know, contend in a state game, you're going to have to go outside the area. And you're also going to have flexibility in your scheduling, where if you're playing teams in the EPC with a lot of new programs, you know, you can't be tied down to that schedule where you have to play them all the time. You need to be able to get out of the area and play more competitive teams from other districts.
I want to backtrack a little bit because we were coming out of a great girls' basketball season. Mm-hmm. I said a couple weeks ago, and Joe disagreed with me on this, but I thought it was one of the best girls' basketball seasons in terms of depth and overall competitiveness we've had in quite some time. I mean, Easton, Nazareth, Northampton, Parkland, Southern Lehigh.
Yeah.
It was just a real fun league. I shouldn't say league because it's the Colonial League, and Southern Lehigh dominated that league. But
right.
EPC and then district play. What were some of your favorite moments during the women's basketball season?
I think Easton was a great story because Easton overcame a lot consistently.
Yeah.
They lost Gabby Blaschuk to a very scary heart ailment to start the season. They rallied from that to win their first league title since 1970. And then they made a mini run in the state playoffs where they beat a Harrisburg team that was really good, and they won in overtime. So that was one of the great stories. I think Southern Lehigh's success, when you do something for the first time, win a district title, under the current classification system, winning a district title, when you do something for the first time like that, that's really admirable. And it says a lot about the girls, because there's not just physical hurdles of winning the game, there's also mental hurdles when you haven't done something and your school's never done something. You know, there's the expectation that you will fail when you get to the championship phase. They didn't. They succeeded, and they were a great team. So overall, I mean, you look at Parkland, team that didn't even make the state tournament. They had a lead on Cumberland Valley. They didn't even have all their starters. They had a lead in Cumberland Valley when they played them in the regular season, going into the fourth quarter. They wound up losing that game narrowly. Cumberland Valley is the 4A champion. Parkland didn't even make the state bracket. So, you know, some people were down about, you know, there wasn't a real dominant team in the area. There were just a range of good teams.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were still plenty of great storylines.
Yeah, and Southern Lehigh is a team. I don't know if anyone in the Colonial League is going to be able to stop them the next couple of years.
Because
just about their entire core is back for two or three more years.
Yeah, they're extremely talented, and they're fun to watch. And I think the best part about Southern Lehigh is that with Amanda Mobley and Olivia Snyder and Ellie Castle, those young players, they are talented, but they also just kind of let it rip. Like, Amanda Mobley just lets it rip. I mean, the way she runs the point is exciting, and it's not the sort of slowdown game that a lot of well, I shouldn't say a lot of, that some girls' basketball teams have employed when they're over, you know, when they're the more talented team, they'll kind of take the air out of the ball and, you know, minimize mistakes. But Southern Lehigh, they play an exciting brand of basketball. And I think that's the one benefit. I mean, if you're a Colonial League team or a Colonial League fan, I think you're probably wary of having to play Southern Lehigh over and over again. But at least it'll be exciting when they beat you by 30.
Yeah, and they don't make mistakes, too. I mean, they're a great blend of talent, fundamentally sound and smart. I mean, it's not a team that you're going to even see, well, maybe if we frustrate them or maybe they'll just, you know, mentally check out, we have a chance to beat them. I really don't think anyone's really going to have a chance to beat them in the next couple of years. We only have a minute left. I want to squeeze in your thoughts on the fall, though. Of course, Parkland girls volleyball had a great year.
Yeah.
Mayes field hockey won a state championship as well. Joe wants to take credit because Liberty's Missy Lynn had a great year coaching.
Absolutely.
You taught
about?
Missy everything she needed to know about volleyball. Missy Lynn at Liberty, coach of the year.
I don't think I've ever met the young lady. I don't even know what you're talking about.
All right. Well, I won't give you credit for that. I'll stick with Kyle here.
I'll give you credit.
Thank you very much.
By the way, we had two state championships this year.
Although my great niece does play for them at Liberty. We'll
but you don't know who the coach was, and she was coach of the year?
Actually, I took Abby Gassler. She's a freshman, and she's on their team and plays quite a bit. So I'll take credit for that one.
Okay, all right.
Abby, you know what I'm talking about.
Good, because I don't. Kyle, go.
Yeah. No, the fall season, I think, well, the feat that I was closest with was Parkland.
Yeah.
And you talk about a team that, first of all, they won back-to-back state titles. They were undefeated. That kind of speaks for itself. But the manner in which they won the state championship was ridiculous. They completely had their back against the wall. They made a stunning comeback, you know, something that I hadn't seen save for the year before when they made a stunning comeback in the state semifinals. So those girls and that team, they were extremely talented, you know, and that's the kind of dominance that's going to be hard to replicate. Although with the way that program is run, it's sort of a well-oiled machine at this point. So if anyone can replicate it, it'll be them. But that group of girls was a special group.
Yep. What's the secret to their success? You say the way that program's run. Why are they so good?
Well, a lot of things for Parkland are derived first and foremost from numbers. I mean, they get fantastic turnout. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, they have the infrastructure, the coaching to make the most of the kids that they do have.
Hmm. More than some of the other school districts, you think?
Quality of coaching obviously can vary.
Yeah.
But I think.
Well, curious because it's true not just in the volleyball. I mean, you look at, we've talked about this many times about Parkland's program and how all their teams are so good. And, you know, you wonder, are they something special in the water or do they have special housing?
By the way, Joe Craig is a Parkland grad, so he's trying to take credit for them as well.
No, not at all. I had a lot of people ask me, why are they so good? I don't know the answer.
All right, we have that trivia question out there looking for the NCAA school that holds the record for men's basketball for wins by 43 points or more in the tournament. Villanova did it once a couple weeks ago. So which school has the record for that great achievement? We also have a discussion on six classifications. I want to pick Kyle's brain about. We haven't talked about the six classifications, how it's going to affect a lot of the girls' sports, too, and I want to hit that. Plus, we have Phillies prospects interviews coming up on tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special guest is Kyle Craig, a sports writer from the Express Times and LehighValleyLive.com, joining Joe Craig and myself. Our trivia question tonight, which school holds the NCAA men's basketball record for wins by 43 points or more in addition to our usual certificate for video on demand, which people always love? We have the retro Shane Victorino bobblehead and one of these finger things wave it at sporting events or hit people over the head with it when they say
right.
Stuff.
I know you want to.
I got to keep this more handy here for our next segment here. As we've talked about on the show, primarily with football and then with basketball, but I want to devote some attention to sports that we don't normally consider when it comes to the classifications. People, as they're probably aware, or some people seem to forget Every now and then, when we talk about next year, things are going to be different. There's going to be six classifications. There's a lot of schools in some categories, very few schools in others, and I'm sure everything will work itself out. But your initial impressions about how it will affect some of the girls' sports programs in the Lehigh Valley area?
Well, I think you're going to see schools and programs that haven't been able to attain the highest level of local success. They now have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it in terms of like the kids' perspective, that's a positive thing. And that's one of the things that proponents of the classification change have talked about, is that the kids don't really care that much if the field was smaller when they're winning a district championship. So from their perspective, it's great. And that's one of the things that administrators talk about. Yeah. But from the outsider perspective, those of us who talk about it, you know, it's easy to roll your eyes when, you know, a school wins a district championship. If that district championship is watered down, and you're from your point of view, there have been other schools that were tremendously talented in the past that didn't have that opportunity, that lost because they were playing in a bigger field. So, you know.
And when you bring that up, people aren't going to agree with you or like you for that, but it's going to be a fact. Yeah. It's at some point, we're going to address it.
Yeah, it comes down, I think, in some situations to the number of teams. Right. You're going to have some divisions and some classifications. They're going to have 3, 4, 5 schools. So, you're going to have a champion and you're going to have a runner-up. But, you know, I'm not sure it means what it did when there was 10 or 12 schools in a classification. And I think it... I have mixed feelings about the whole thing, quite frankly, but I think it waters it down to a degree, although more kids do get the chance to experience having a championship, and that is a good thing.
Right. I think one of the things that's always been the most frustrating part when we talk about reform as far as classification goes, is that you want to kind of strike a balance. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think that this serves the purpose or serves the function of the type of reform that people talk about the most, which is, you know, regarding private schools and them playing in the public system and for public state championships. That's what people talk about the most. I don't think many people talked about the need to divvy up the classifications and get more classifications. They wanted to separate private schools and, well, let's say not just private and public, they also wanted to separate charter schools, which are a form of public schools, but, you know, have a different rules for enrollment. So they wanted some separation there, and they're not even close to talking about that in Pennsylvania. So that's the frustrating part, is like, okay, here's a change. It's not necessarily the change that people talk about every week when they're sitting in the stands. No. So that's a frustrating part. And the thing that, you know, if you look at Pennsylvania, from what I've seen, their number of classifications was really low compared to the rest of the nation, what other states do. So that's, you know, an argument for this change. But you just hope it doesn't go the way of New Jersey, where they have, you know, something like
29 champions.
Yeah, 26 or so football champions at the end of the year, where that's just kind of a farce.
Yeah, you want the lower central quadrant 1A or whatever.
Right.
What the reclassifications and the increase in classifications, the cynical person out there.
Like who? Like me?
No, nobody here. No, and I'm probably more cynical than some, but I think a lot of people are out there and look at this as they say all these good things and about more kids playing for championships, but a lot of people think it comes down to this.
Right.
You know, that more championship games means more events, which means more income, which goes into coffers, whether it be the state PIAA coffers, district coffers, wherever it might be. I think that's the part of it that I think many people look at and say, you know, is this really the best thing? Is this really why we're doing it?
Well, the one thing you have to ask yourself about that is there a point of diminishing returns where the quality of the championship games doesn't draw in those kind of third parties, those fans that might have been interested beforehand? So I think there is probably a point, but as you said, more games mean more money, typically.
More income, more playoff games. I mean, it's you know.
But there are probably changes, different changes you can make to make things more exciting. I know in New Jersey, I brought up New Jersey again, but that's because I cover New Jersey too. They have a tournament of champions for basketball where all the classifications you know, have it out with one another, and that's a huge moneymaker. But I mean, Pennsylvania, they obviously the state's a lot bigger, so that's a challenge too. But you know, when I think about this, and I sit in the office in Easton between the two states, if they could merge both their systems together, they could find the perfect system. But instead, there are things that are screwed up with both.
Well, the argument about going with all these classifications is that we want to keep up with what the other states do because we have so few. Well, people who are against the parochial, the private and public being together could look at that same argument and say, yeah, a lot of states have championship for private schools and a separate one for public. So if the argument's good, we want to keep up with the other states in the number of classifications, why isn't the argument good in the other area? Because there are a lot of states that do what many people in Pennsylvania want.
Well, absolutely. But I think the biggest part about this is, I don't know if this is just, you know, recency bias, but with each passing year, it seems like there's a greater disenchantment between fans, between people around certain sports about how competitive you truly can be. I mean, there's always seems to be like an invisible ceiling for teams like, we're talking about football again, it seems like we naturally shift back to it.
Sure.
But for teams like Saucon Valley or Penn Ardrill, that there's always going to be this ceiling that they're going to hit because of the current way the situation is, the classifications are. And you know, that's when we make changes to the system. I think the changes should battle that sort of disenchantment that I think a lot of fans feel, because high school sports are not a place where people should leave the arena, leave the venue in a furious rage because they feel like they got cheated.
Yeah.
And there are some people that feel that way. Yeah. And I don't think, you know, this change, while it's, you know, has its pluses and minuses, it does nothing to really address that.
All right, time for thumbs up, thumbs down. Now we'll continue this conversation plus our roundtable coming up in just a moment. The thumbs up, thumbs down is where we identify an individual or group of people in the world of sports and single them out for doing something really good or something not so good. Joe, we'll start
with
you.
My thumbs up goes to all the Villanova fans, all of Jay Wright and the Villanova basketball team, and how much of a wonderful thing this did for the area of Philadelphia and the tri-state area all the way up into Lehigh Valley. It was great for this whole area to have a champion, a true champion, and it's been a long time since.
Blue-collar approach.
Absolutely.
Kyle, who'd you like to give thumbs up or thumbs down to?
My thumbs up, I'm going to keep it local, is to Jahan Dotson, Nazareth wide receiver, currently the Nazareth wide receiver.
Leaving.
Who received an offer from Alabama this week, and that's about as big as it gets and about as big time as it gets. So even though he is transferring and is going to play next fall at Petty School, in New Jersey, I said New Jersey for like the fifth time.
Stop shaking your head.
Since I've been here, even though that's happening, I mean, it's still a tremendous accomplishment for a Lehigh Valley athlete.
Yeah. Good kid too.
Yeah, and he's one of the he's one of the nation's top recruits, and for kids to have the kids that played against him, the kids that played youth football with him, I mean, that's tremendous. I mean, it's a real rarity to have someone at that, high level as a sophomore and also from the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah. All right, real quick. Mine is a former 76er in Georgetown Hoya, Allen Iverson, on earning a Hall of Fame induction. He's been through a lot. Love him or hate him. Mark my words here, Joe. Listen very carefully. Pound for pound, the best basketball player of all time. Not the greatest of all time, but
toughest,
pound for pound.
Not the best.
All right. We'll be back with more RCN Sports Talk starring Kyle Craig along with Joe and myself in just a moment.
Chance to interact with us.
Call, email, or tweet us your sports comments, questions, and opinions.
We want to hear from you right now. And now, here's more RCN Sports Talk.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Kyle Craig putting up with us. Joe, for our people listening to us on our podcast, is literally hitting us with his finger. Or this finger, which you're supposed to show off here. I gave it to you to show off.
I held it up for quite a bit.
The question one more time, which school holds the NCAA men's basketball record for wins by 43 more or more points? We're giving away a video on demand certificate plus
Shane Victorino bobblehead. And this is a vintage item because, of course, you all know he's no longer with us as far as a Philly. And he was part of the great years. So
he's still nice alive, though.
Yeah. I said as far as the Philly. Yeah. Good Lord, please don't.
Why couldn't
Hawaii, one of the Hawaii's most famous.
Why couldn't Ruben Amaro trade you before he left? All right, time for the round table. The round table is where we have a variety of local, regional, and national sports topics that we put before our panelists. They do not know what's coming. And we'll start with topic number one here. What is the better entertainment product, the NBA or the NCAA basketball? And I know this is a little unfair because we're coming off one of the greatest finishes ever, but Kyle, I'll start with you, an intelligent person here leading off this question.
Okay, thanks. Where is he?
I was going to say, is somebody else here?
First you hit him over the head with a stuffed whatever it is. Well, they insult him on live television.
I'm concussed. well, like you said, after the most recent championship game, national championship, it's hard to argue against it, the NCAA product. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the NCAA tournament is something that no one can replicate. It is perfect in its size. It is perfect in its marketability. And it's perfect in its excitement factor, Cinderella's, upsets, all that stuff. Yep. There is nothing that can compete with the NCAA tournament in terms, like, on its own. Now, the NCAA regular season is a little bit of a different story. But when you talk about the NBA, you know, looking at the NBA, the coverage of the NBA is tied in to ESPN because ESPN obviously has a major TV deal with the NBA.
We got 15 shows during the day all relating to the NBA.
But it seems to me that those 15 shows only talk about four teams. So if you're not in the market of one of those four teams, you're seeing, I mean, the story has been cast that they have no chance. Yeah. So why are you watching?
This is a very tough question to, and not really a good question to ask people who live in this market area.
Right, yeah, sure.
With the kind of NBA basketball we get to see on a regular basis.
Well, Washington was pretty good up until
you're right. For our people, I went to a Washington game.
Yeah, I know you didn't take me.
A couple of weeks ago.
Front row seats, didn't take
me. If you're from the Philadelphia area, there's no decision to discuss on this one. Yeah. I think you're right. I think the NCAA tournament is a special thing. I mean, there's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And that includes, maybe the Olympics might be close, but there's nothing else like it. And I think the thing that makes it so great is really the first 2 to 3 rounds.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's the knowing that this school, a George Mason, could knock off a North Carolina State, you know, or that kind of stuff, or a Lehigh would knock off a Duke, for goodness sake. Who would think that? That's what makes the basketball so special.
All right, topic number two, is the Major League Baseball, either in terms of games or season, too long? And the reason I brought this up now, it started on social media as a kind of a joke a couple days ago. There's a site called Make Baseball Great Again, which I think is more of a parody of Donald Trump or whatever.
Right.
But really, I think people kind of bought in that, you know what? The season's too long. The games are too long. And people are kind of outwardly complaining that, you know what, baseball has become uninteresting. So, Joe, you have a disgusted look on your face. Go ahead. Joe, I'll start with you.
No, I don't think it's too long. I think in number of days it's too long. I have always been an advocate for playing more daytime, nighttime doubleheaders during the season. Play some Sunday or Saturday doubleheaders. Cut the season maybe by 2 weeks or so and make it a little shorter, but you could still play the 162 games. That could be done. Anybody says it couldn't be done, they're blowing smoke.
So you said no, but then you said we should cut down the games.
No, I said that don't change the number of games, but you could shorten the length of the season about 2 weeks.
I'm completely confused. Kyle,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but no, they would never do that because
of course not.
The fragility of the arms. They wouldn't want to put their pitchers in all those situations.
The relief pitchers.
Yeah. Right. And I mean the rotation.
All right. Time for our break. Last break of the evening. And tonight we talk with members of the Philadelphia AAA baseball team to recap their spring training and look ahead to the new season.
Yeah, spring training was phenomenal. It was great to get down to Clearwater and get going. After last season and everything that happened, it was nice to start fresh, start new, and really enjoyed it.
This spring was great. I had a great time. starting out, it's sometimes a little, you know, you just want to keep your head down, and you don't really know anybody, and so you're just slowly starting to develop relationships and get to know the teammates that you'll have. And I feel like I've gotten to know some guys pretty well, and so you know we're excited to continue to get to know each other and continue to play together. And I think especially the off the field stuff, the more we get to know each other and spend time with each other, I think that just helps with chemistry on the field.
Spring training went well. It was very, very cool to be over on the big league side of things for the first time and experience that. And then after I got sent down, everything went smooth and excited for the season to get going.
How excited I was to get to spring training. And, it started at the organizational meetings, listening to what guys had to say about these young players and, who we acquired in trades and guys we haven't seen, and some of the younger players that I haven't seen pitch. The guys that have pitched in Lakewood, the guys that were in Clearwater are now starting to, got to Reading, and, you start hearing the names. Now you want to put names to faces, and you want to see just what everyone else is talking about.
I feel fortunate to be in this organization where I know there'll be some opportunity up there. And in the meantime, I've heard great things about this town and their love for the Iron Pigs, and I'm excited to get out there and play some baseball.
That's why, for me, from a personal standpoint, I was excited to get to spring training, and it didn't let me down. I was more impressed probably coming out saying, wow, sometimes, you tend to say when, someone talks about how great that movie is, and then you go see that movie, and it just didn't pan out, Well, I can tell you this movie was a lot better, than what I saw and what I expected.
Welcome back to the final segment of RCN Sports Talk. Final reminder that people can email the correct answer to us for tonight's trivia question, which is, which school holds the NCAA men's basketball record for wins by 43 or more points? The email address, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Please include your name and address. And if we have multiple submissions, we'll have a drawing on next week's show. All right, let's go to the phone lines. John from Rosetta would like to talk about the District 11 and PIAA classifications for next year. John, welcome to Sports Talk.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, John. How you doing?
Oh, we're good. We're good. It's either politics or you guys to watch tonight. I always watch you guys.
Kind of the same thing sometimes.
I think we're probably not quite as volatile as the politics.
And that's a good thing.
I guess. What's up?
That's a good thing. Well, I heard Kyle about the classifications. I just want to comment a few things since I've had experience since 1974 coaching in both states, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Let me give you the perspective on the classifications here. When I was principal at Pinardo, we went through this discussion, I'd say 7-8 years ago. And the big thing there was when the Philly schools came into the PIAA,
right,
it packed the upper levels of enrollment to the point where it kept, at Pinardo, we were double A, so it kept teams or schools that would have naturally gone into the AAA category, it compacted it down into the double A's.
Right.
When we did our investigation and tried to have an increase, and actually we had mentioned at the district level, increase the classifications. We're one of the six most populated states. And out of the six, we were the only ones that had 4, 4A as the max.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else was 5 and 6As. So I applaud the correction there this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you're eliminating 1 week of playing, which hopefully you're not going to get a snowstorm in the middle of December like you've had in Hershey.
Yeah.
In regards to New Jersey, Kyle, I know you kind of, as a young guy, you don't know that a long time ago, I coached in 1974 in the first New Jersey state playoffs.
I remember that.
New Jersey had state playoffs 10 years prior to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they did.
I know your criticism is the 20-some champions or whatever. I'll balance that with the fact that our players did not get interrupted with wrestling and basketball, and I never had to worry about playing a game on Thursday, which we did play on Turkey Day, and play Saturday. I do like, and I did applaud their parochial A and B, which was separate. I don't think in this day and age there'll be too many lawsuits to try to create that over here. Yeah. But that's my input to you.
John, right. Let me ask you a question.
We've got 30 seconds, Joe.
Okay. Real quick, do you think the influx of District 12 has changed the whole picture in PIAA?
Do I think the influence of District 11?
The influx of District 12, the Philadelphia schools.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And, you know, at Panage, we had to play two charter schools 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Which was a very, you know, it's an unbalanced situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, thanks so much for your insights. We
very
appreciate
good.
That.
Thanks, John.
All right. Real quick, got 20 seconds. One quick question here. Yes, no.
No.
Will you watch the Masters this weekend? Kyle?
Yes, on Sunday.
Just on Sunday? And do you know what the Masters are, Joe?
Yes, I do. If it's cloudy and rainy, I'll watch it to see some nice green grass and nice weather.
My thanks to Kyle Craig and Eitan Shand, our special guests on tonight's show. We'll be back next week with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.